Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
A lot of the background information that I got for today's episode is actually from a YouTube channel that covered Sharon's case back when it was still unsolved. So a shout out to Under the Ash Tree for doing a bang up job of going back to the Montreal newspaper archives for information closer to the source at the time of the actual events. Now, however, there was a couple of inconsistencies that I'm going to be clearing up. It was just stuff that came up either from Sharon's mom or one of the cold case detectives that's a little bit different than what was initially reported by them.
I don't remember anything after I left the house until I got to jail.
The law didn't come into my mind. I wasn't caring about the law. I was dealing with dead children on my hands. Fuck the law. I'm in trouble, man. My kids are dead.
But once I lied, I continued to lie. Yes, sir.
Why?
You know, oh, what a tangled web we weave. But once I told the lie, I had to keep lying.
And what kind of person would do something like that?
I know.
I'm asking you, what kind of person do you think would do something like that?
Obviously not someone, not a good person.
Blonde, blue-eyed, and warm-hearted Sharon was born on February 9th, 1959 to her mom Yvonne and her father George, who was in the military. Yvonne had originally been from the UK and then moved to Canada as a child, where she had met George. In 2 years after the birth of Sharon, Yvonne gave birth to twin girls, Doreen and Maureen. The family then moved to Manitoba, where George was relocated to, and the youngest of the children, George Jr., was born then. In 1965, when Sharon was six, her parents divorced, and Yvonne and the kids moved back to Montreal, where they settled in the then affordable area of Sud-Ouest, which is more commonly known in English as the Point St. Charles, which is west of the Nuns Bridge on Congregation Street. It's a residential street with a series of brick walk-up townhouses. Petite 5'3" Sharon was described as a gentle and kind soul. She had dreams to become a veterinarian and often took in strays that needed just a little TLC. She was a member of the Boys and Girls Club. She played floor hockey and loved to do crafts. She was somewhat shy and careful, always responsible. And by 1975, when she was 16, she had a group of friends, including a boyfriend named John from school, and was a pretty typical teenager for the time period. On Saturday, March 29th, 1975, it was the day before Easter Sunday, and the day started off just like any other, except for the fact that her mom was making preparations for the Easter dinner that was going to be the next night. George Jr. was only 11, and apparently they were fostering a four-year-old boy named Stephen at the time, so Easter would have then had to include an egg hunt and some goodies. So her mom went out to get some supplies, and Sharon stayed home with the other kids and painted some eggs. Now, she had to go out a little bit later to grab a jacket from the Boys and Girls Club that she had been awarded for selling raffle tickets for the club. So being responsible, she took little Stephen with her, and her and Stephen returned home, and Yvonne's friend came over for their Easter dinner. And then after dinner, she helped with the cleanup, and then she asked if she could go meet her friends at Marina's Pizzeria, which was about 5 blocks away from their house. It was a well-known gathering spot for local teens on Ash Avenue in Wellington. Now, from Sharon's house on Congregation, she would have taken a right and then continued west to the end of her block, and then 4 blocks south, and would have taken about 7 minutes to walk it. Now, being a typical teenager, it wasn't going to meet your friends for pizza. Wasn't exactly just a grab your coat and go thing. Like, she had to carefully select what she's going to wear. So one of her friends had stopped by around 6:30 while she was trying to make her decision and hung out with her just while she was getting ready. In the end, she decided on a sweater and her favorite suede jacket. Now, suede jackets were all really popular in the 1970s. The two girls left the house together right at 7:15, but her friend wasn't going to the pizza place. She was going to go home. So they parted ways outside Sharon's front door. And her friends at Marina's, where they were supposed to meet up, waited for her arrival. Now, there was also a hockey game that was going on that night. So her girlfriends all just kind of assumed that she had decided to go to the game with her boyfriend, John, instead. But when John and his friends arrived at the pizza place after the game, Sharon wasn't with them either. Back at home around 9 p.m., Yvonne got a phone call from one of Sharon's friends, Donna, who asked if Sharon was there. And Yvonne said no, she had gone to Marina's. It was something that she did on almost every Saturday night. Well, Donna got quiet for a second and said, well, I don't want to scare you, but there was a woman that was just attacked on Ash Avenue just down from that pizza place. Well, of course, this freaked Yvonne out as it would any parent, but there was no cell phone, so she couldn't just go and check on her. But to Maureen and Doreen, they were 14 at the time, like their mom, Yvonne's already looking pretty frantic, and said that she had a really bad feeling. Now, Sharon's 11 o'clock curfew came and went, and by 2 a.m., Yvonne just couldn't take it anymore, and she called the police, who, of course, told her, don't worry, she's probably just at a party, she'll be home in the morning. But Yvonne told them, like, you don't understand. It's completely not like her. There was just an attack on the street where she was going down, and there had been. Like, that was factual information that Donna had relayed to her, like, almost right at the same time that Sharon had been walking to the pizza place at 7:20, a 23-year-old woman named Cheryl Waugh was attacked by a man waving a knife at her, who was scared off by a group of young men that were passing by. The man had dark hair and a mustache. He was wearing jeans and a blue ski jacket and speaking English, not French. Now, this attack happened on Avenue Ash, which is only about a 6-minute walk from Congregation and right really close to that pizzeria. But the police hadn't made any connection to that at that point. And to be honest, I couldn't really find any details of a search that had been launched for Sharon in the days after she went missing. Now, initially, they believed that she had just run away. But Yvonne had told the police that her friends said Sharon never talked about running away anywhere and was always very reliable and home by 11 o'clock on the weekends all the time. And the pizza place was a regular hangout, and she had left her bus pass and her savings all behind in her room, so there was no way that she had run away. Well, early in the morning on April 1st, a beekeeper at the apiary over on Longville, about a 25-minute drive from Sharon's, he noticed that the lock that he knew that he had closed the night before was now hanging open, like it was one of those metal padlocks. And he thought that that was odd. There's not really a lot of break-ins in beehives, but maybe someone had come later and forgot to lock it again. So he walked through the gate, and in this partially wooded area, he found a pair of discarded jeans, and then a body of a young woman, nude from the waist down. Her underwear was hung up on a tree near her body. She had been beaten very badly, her favorite suede jacket laid on top of her, and there was some tape that appeared to have been chewed. It was caught in her hair and some branches that were clutched in her hand. And this all indicated that she had been left there still alive and had been trying to free herself when she succumbed to either her injuries or the cold. After 4 days of hearing literally nothing from the police, Yvonne had woken up early on the 2nd of April to see out her front window her friend Ronnie was knocking on the door of a neighbor across the street from her with his paper under his arm. And she called out to him asking, like, why are you up so early? That kind of thing. And he blew her off, which was strange. So she thought that that was very, just the way he was acting was just really strange. So she walked over to him and grabbed the paper from under his arm, only to see that the front page was splashed with news of a girl's body being found. And from the picture of the girl's shoes, she knew it was Sharon. And 40 years later, Maureen and Doreen told W5 that they could still recall hearing Yvonne screaming, "It's her, it's her." Now, no one had come to see Yvonne yet about these unidentified remains, so she had called the police about it herself, and her brother went down to the medical examiner's office to identify her, and it was definitely Sharon. And at the time, the scene was described as messy, with objects kind of strewn about. And the only useful evidence were some tire tracks in the snow and a blood trail that led from the tire tracks to where Sharon was found. There were no drag marks, and Sharon's feet, like her socks and her shoes, were clean on the bottom from any kind of debris in the area, indicating that she had been carried from a vehicle to where she was essentially dumped. She had also suffered at least some injuries before being dumped there, but she was still alive. Strapped to the sleeve of one of Sharon's, it was a 3/4 length suede jacket, was a man's long sleeve dress shirt, size 17 and a half with a 34 inch sleeve length. So he would have been about 6 feet tall. And the shirt, they believed, had been taken off to use to tie Sharon up with. And near the gate to the apiary, while there was a right shoe print from a shoe size 8 and a half. And found scattered around her was one of her rings and the receipt given to her from the jacket that she had picked up from the Boys and Girls Club. And the fact that Sharon's socks and shoes were on her, but her jeans and underwear were not, the killer would have had to sort of struggle a little bit to get them off of her, even though she would have been restrained and injured very gravely at the time. After the autopsy was done, there was a few findings that the police could kind of use as clues. Her time of death was estimated to be about 20 hours before she was found. And at the time, based on the sort of the time of death, they believe that Sharon might have been held somewhere for a day or two before being dumped. Her chest had been crushed from someone kneeling on it, which caused some internal bleeding. Her face was a mess of injuries, including fractures on both sides of her jaw and a hole in one of her cheeks from a tooth pushing through. And also her nose was broken. So her cause of death was actually choking on her own blood from her facial injuries. Like, good Lord, that is terrifying.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beatyourprice. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beatyourprice.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beatyourprice. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beatyourprice.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
In the first year, the police interviewed about 38 people regarding her case, but had not been able to charge anyone with her killing, including the manager of Marina's Pizza and the beekeeper. And in the year 2000, learning of some advancements in this DNA thing, Yvonne actually called the police to ask if they would reopen the investigation and test some of the evidence that they had collected at the time. Now, apparently, quite a few things were actually discarded back in 1995 for whatever reason, but they had kept her clothing. So some hair samples were pulled and filed, but there wasn't anything that they could really do with them at the time. Like the DNA they could extract wasn't a large enough sample to hone in on All they could really determine was that it did not match Sharon's DNA. A reward of $10,000 was set up in 2012 to anyone that had information leading to the arrest of Sharon's killer, but the case was cold. But web sleuths, of course, had their theories, but none of them turned out to be correct. And the Boys and Girls Club set up a memorial scholarship in Sharon's name, and the family created a website, never giving up hope that someday they're going to have the answers that they so really desperately needed. By 2021, some 46 years later, Sharon's case had moved to the Cold Case Unit under Detective Sergeant Eric Rassicott. Now, he was the 14th officer to have taken over Sharon's case. Yvonne was now in her 80s. Her hands were crippled with arthritis, her eyesight's failing. But she had never given up on Sharon's case, but she had kind of accepted that she might never know or like what or who rather had happened to Sharon, like who she had come across that fateful spring night. But by the time that Sergeant Rassicott had been asked to review the file, which was actually being done to try to connect Sharon's case to another cold case, there was about 7 or 8 boxes of documents and evidence, including transcripts of interviews with witnesses and reports. So when going over the photos from the crime scene, Eric noticed the fact that her jeans were off, but her shoes were still on, which to him meant that there had to be some kind of struggle to get those jeans off over top of her shoes. And it must have left some DNA behind. Like the killer would have been grabbing and pulling and twisting on the fabric, leaving some transfer DNA, which was something back in 1995 they wouldn't have even thought about. Based on some FBI profiling that was done, I think back in the 80s, Eric believed that the man that had attacked Cheryl Waugh that night had been the one that had been scared off and ran down the back alley. And he must have run smack into Sharon, and feeling the urge that he had that hadn't quite been quelled by Cheryl, he attacked and grabbed Sharon. He would have been about 6 foot, blue eyes, and about 28 years old. Now, they knew that based on some phenotype profile documents that were in the file, which kind of give a description of some details of the person based on their DNA profile. And now this guy's profile matched with those details, but at the time, the DNA profile that the time that it was done, DNA wasn't so much about what something was, but more about what something wasn't. So what Nicholas Trembe, who's a forensic biologist, says is that they, like say with a hair sample, they can say with a high probability that the hair is not black or not red or whatever, but they can't differentiate between, say, blonde and dirty blonde. It was really more like sort of genetic profiling, like more than the 1 in a trillion matches that we get today. DNA has been evolving a lot since then, like a lot since then. So don't do any crimes because you're going to get caught. Now, we all know that this story is going to lead to these genealogy websites, as ever since the Golden State Killer, it's the new way of finding DNA matches of families that are likely not criminals to match to one of their family line that is criminals. And it's being used more and more today. Well, what I didn't know, and maybe you didn't know this either, is that according to Nicholas, if only 1-3% of the population puts their DNA into these sites, then they can almost always find the familial family tree to lead back to a suspect. Now, being that this was the case of a male DNA profile that they're looking for, that actually made things a lot easier because the Y chromosome is passed down to males in the family exactly, like it's an exact match. So it's easier to find other male family members because the DNA doesn't get watered down so much, which is a very non-scientific way of describing this, but probably makes the most relatable comparison for us. But the problem is that every time the DNA is tested, it's destroyed, and then it can't be retested. And the DNA that they had already gathered had already been tested to do the profile that they did in the first place. So Eric asks himself, well, what about the jeans that Sharon was wearing that the killer would have struggled to pull off? So they tested them, and wouldn't you know that they had 3 exact DNA profiles were pulled from her jeans, the shirt that was used as a restraint, and then her underwear. Now, genealogy on these DNA samples narrowed the field down to the Romine family that was from West Virginia, and a family that had 8 family members, all siblings, that would have been in the age range of the suspect at the time. Now, 4 of the siblings were men. Unfortunately, only 2 of those brothers were still alive in 2022. One was still living in West Virginia, and then the other one in Florida. And one of the brothers that had died was traced to Montreal in 1975, and he had a criminal history. And he matched the description of the guy that attacked Cheryl. So now he would have been about 28 in 1975. So in order to try and make sure that they were on the right path, they obtained DNA samples from the 2 living brothers to confirm the family lineage at least. So police in both Florida and West Virginia set out to do that part of the investigation for them. And both brothers were happy to oblige. In fact, one of them said he probably did it. Now, why was he so sure that he probably did it? Well, his brother Franklin had actually tried at one point to rape his wife. So it was a good indicator that they're on the right track with which brother they're looking at. And the other brother said that he wasn't surprised. He was violent when he was around. In fact, the brothers wouldn't be surprised if it turned out that he'd killed some other girls. Franklin Maywood Romine, and I don't know if it's Romine or Romine, he was born on April 2nd, 1946 in West Virginia, and his name had not come up in the 48 years of tips and leads on this case. He started committing crimes at the tender age of 11, and he quickly built himself a pretty good rap sheet of criminal offenses, and many of them violent. And Franklin was obviously a man that didn't really want to be contained, because in 1964, he attempted to escape from the West Virginia penitentiary. And he managed to actually escape in 1967, and then decided that going back and forth between Canada and the US was a good way to continue to commit his crimes without being caught. And by 1969, his rap sheet had started to grow on our side of the border as well. And by 1973, he was out on parole, even after escaping, and then decided to break into some poor woman's house and rape her. So not wanting to be curtailed with that, he fled to Montreal after being granted bail on a $2,500 bond and landed his sorry ass pretty much right into the Pryor's neighborhood. In 1975, and 7 months after Sharon's murder and Cheryl's attempted rape, which let's face it, that's what it was, he was arrested and extradited back to West Virginia, getting himself a 5 to 10 year prison sentence. But he returned to Montreal in 1982, where at the age of 36, he apparently died. Although no one was able to track down any records about how he had died. Now, hopefully he had been stabbed in the neck with a rusty knife. His body was then shipped back to his long-suffering mother in Putnam County in West Virginia, where she buried his sorry ass in the Pine Grove Cemetery. Now, with the results of the brothers' DNA coming back to be 140 million times more likely to have come from one of the dead brothers than the 2 that they had gotten samples from, now, surprisingly, the U.S. released the news there, released the brothers' names, but I'm not going to do that. I think that they're still alive. Anyways, they asked for an order to exhume Franklin's body. The surviving family did oppose it, but only because it was considered wrong under their religious beliefs to disturb someone's body. But on April 20th, 2022, Judge Philip Storrs said, yes, we're going to do that. And after hearing arguments from the U.S. prosecutor who said, it's a combination of the most evil element in the human race contacting the most innocent element of the human race, a child. Some things are worse than death, losing a child like that for a family, for a mom, to know that your child died that way. So needless to say, Franklin Romine's, or Romine's, however you say it, DNA was a perfect match to all 3 samples from Sharon's clothing. And Doreen, Sharon's sister, said, the solving of Sharon's case will never bring Sharon back. But knowing that her killer is no longer on this earth and won't kill anymore brings us somewhat of closure. And Maureen said, you may never have come back to our house on Congregation Street that weekend, but you never left our hearts and you never will. We love you, Sharon. Now you may truly rest in peace. And with that, Yvonne Pryor finally had her answer to who had killed her baby girl. As for not getting justice, she was just glad that he was dead and couldn't do anything to anyone else's daughter. Like, I don't know. I never really know how to feel. when justice gets denied for so long and then the guy's dead. I'm happy for Yvonne that she found out at least who and what had happened to her daughter in her lifetime. And I hope that that brings her some peace. And that was the murder of Sharon Pryor. And I'm going to be back again next week with another case. It's one that you're going to think is one particular case, but it's actually another case and one that you've probably never heard about. And in the meantime, you do your thing. And as always, thank you so much for listening.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details. Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.